Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You're tuned into Real College Podcast, and I'm your host, Jacob. This week, we're going to be taking a look at festivals, and not just exclusively music festivals. This episode will also include a very special interview with Dwinell Rowland. He was the only rapper on this year's Rock the Garden lineup. You can hear all that and more on this week's episode of Real College Podcast, which starts right now. Alex is going to kick it off with the question of the week, brought to you all the way from Canada.
Here at Real College Podcast, I like to think we ask the real tough questions. That's why this week I asked people,
would you rather battle an army of zombie bears or zombie moose?
Zombie bears. They're not as fierce and tough as a moose is. Not as grumpy.
Moose, because I'm going to dodge them in the trees. Their antlers are going to be way too big.
No, moose I'll live in the trees. Them. They can run through trees.
And I'll climb the tallest mountain. Rock. Live with the goats.
Would you rather fight an army of zombie grizzly bears or an army of zombie moose?
I'm going to go with the zombie moose because they don't have teeth. They're big, but they'd be slow.
Moose, because they don't have sharp teeth and claws.
I'm going to go with grizzly bears because I feel like they'd be super slow and a little clumsy, but adorable at the same time.
Well, bear's my spirit animal. I believe that battling my spirit animal would be horrible. So I will have to climb the trees like the bears to get away from the moose.
From Real College Podcast, I'm Alex Schumacher.
Dwinell Rowland is a rapper from the Twin Cities. He got his start in music fairly young. I sat down to chat with him about a week before his big show at Rock the Garden. Without any further ado, here's the interview with Dwinell.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about how you got your start in music?
Just really just being around my cousins. I was around people that did music, and I used it as, you know, a form of just not getting into BS. So, you know, I would just sit down and write just to express my feelings. And then it started to take another level, kind of, with me and my cousins made a group with another friend of theirs, actually. And we started rapping. And this was the time when I was just rapping about nothing. Like, nothing.
Like, what were some of the raps about?
I don't even want to talk about it because it's that bad. Like, it was terrible, and it's bad. But, and so just started writing and did that, and then really got serious with music around 18, 19. I'm 24 now, and that's, you know, just really just dug in deep and was like, all right, I really want to do this.
Was there, like, a specific moment that you sort of decided that it was something that you wanted to do seriously?
I guess there's two. One is, one is the Nelly, when I went to a concert that Nelly did a long time ago, and I seen it, and I was like, dude, this is super dope. And this was at the Target Center. Like, that's how, you know, that's how long, because rap shows never, ever go to the Target Center. Unless you're Drake. Hi, Aubrey. This was a long time ago, and it's like sold out on Think Cash Money. The Hot Boys, Lil Wayne, all of them were on it as well, and Lil Kim. I feel like it was crazy, and I seen it, and I was like, man, this is super dope. I really want to do this. And that's when I was like probably 14, 15. But when I really started to look, it's when I seen a lot of just artists, just everywhere, and I was just like, you can really make a living and enjoy this. I mean, you don't got to be the biggest rapper ever, but you know, you can still make a living and be like, this is my job, this is what I wanted to do. And just seeing how people move, and this is for me like recently, and like, you know, Steph and POS and Sims and, you know, the whole Doomtree Collective and Astronautist and a lot of people on Rhymesayers, and it just really is like, dang.
In this time, are there any artists that are inspiring you either locally or on a national level?
Locally, it has to be Steph, for sure. PLS, for sure. I mean, just to see, just to witness, like, firsthand, being by his side for a whole month on tour, seeing how he grinds and seeing how he works and then seeing how people gravitate to him. It's just like, dang. I'm just like, dog, you just had someone just cry. He's like, yeah, I know. Like, it's crazy every single time for me. I'm like, hey, man, listen, no one's crying over me. I tell you that much.
Not so, yet.
We can only hope, right? We can right. only hope.
So tell me a little bit about how did that come about? Because you were featured on at least one track, maybe more, on Chill Dummy.
I was on Pieces in Ruins, so it was just that one.
That one.
With a bus driver.
And then you toured with POS.
Correct.
So how did that sort of come about? How did you meet him?
Shout out to Fundo. Fundo is the main connection with that. Pretty much Fundo asked me to do one of his parties that he usually does. POS was there, and he saw me perform, and we talked for a little bit. And then I later seen him later on that week with chilling with Fundo. He was like, yeah, man, let's make music. And I was like, you lying? that was my first thing. I was like, man, you lying? But all right, man. So we exchanged numbers, and they hit me up. He was like, yo, hey, come over here, man. Okay, come to the crib. We're about to make something. And at the time, I was just like, all right, okay, all right. So I went over there. Bus driver was over there. And then that's how that song happened. And that was the first song I ever made. And then he's on my album as well, The Popular Nobody.
And then you went on tour with him. So what was that like to tour with POS?
It was great. If like I said, if I had to do a first tour, I tell this with friends and people and everybody, if I had to do a first tour, I would rather do it with POS and Sims and Fundo. Because you get a balance, you know? It's a lot. You know, you got Fundo, crazy party animal. Then you got Sims, very chill, cool. Then you got Steph, who's just like, hey, I don't care. So when you equal all of that, it's just like you learn a lot instead of just everyone just partying or everyone just being chill and everyone just being like, I don't care. They would even help me with shows as far as just like I was the first one up every show, but they would push it back 10 minutes before. These crowds were already big, and it was just them just being helpful to be like, yo, we're just trying to look out for you, and which they did, and it's amazing. I've learned a lot. It was great, and for anyone that's listening to this that will be on tour or something soon, make sure you drink water before you go to bed if you're going to drink.
Good tips.
I'm telling you.
Just for life, that's a good tip.
Yeah, but it's really, yeah. But life on the road and you drink it yeah, drink water.
Drink some water. That's good advice. And so coming up, you are going to be performing at Rock the Garden, which is going to be another big crowd. So tell me a little bit about that and how are you feeling about performing at Rock the Garden?
I'm feeling great. I'm also feeling nervous because I'm the only rapper. So I don't know how the crowd is going to be. But at the end of the day, I'm just going to do what I got to do. It's going to be dope. I'm excited. I'm excited to just because, I've never been to Rock the Garden. So the first time I go is the first time I play. Hey. So,
cool.
And that and just for the simple fact that it's different.
So what are you expecting will be the difference performing at something like Rock the Garden, where it's outdoors, it's a festival, compared to like a normal concert that you would have?
Like I said, it's a different crowd. It's not an all rap based crowd. Prov is an all rap based. Outdoors is an all rap based crowd. You know, Soundset all rap based crowd. this crowd is just different, and I'm the only rapper. So, you know, but at the end of the day, you do what you got to do. And I've always learned that, and I've always taught myself that while looking at others. It's just, yo, this is no different.
So tell me a little bit about your album, The Popular Nobody, when it came out, and tell me a little bit about the writing process for that album.
Yeah, man, the Popular Nobody is just one of those things where it's fun to me, and it's kind of personal. I've always been known, and this is like before music. Like a lot of people know who I am. I have a lot of friends. I have a lot of associates, whatever. But I've always felt like no one like actually knows who I am. They just know me as either Jamari. Hey, yo, what's up, Jay? What's up, Jamari? How you doing, bro? That's my first name, if no one knows it. Or they know me as Donnell Rowland. Yo, Donnell, hey, what's up? Which I'm starting to get a lot of that now, more than Jamari, which is kind of funny. And I wanted to showcase an album where it's just like, all right, I'm the popular nobody. Like, you guys know me, but do you guys really know me? And that was my big picture of it. It's weird. I don't come into it having an idea of what I want to write. I listen to the beat. I put my headphones in, and I just start typing. And then when I start typing, then just be like, all right, cool. That's what I'm going to write about. Or that's how I want to have this song go.
Is there a track off that album that you're proudest of?
Whirlwind.
Whirlwind? Yeah, that's a good song.
Yeah, I love Whirlwind. Whirlwind is amazing.
Feeling lost in this life that came overnight. Demon steady laughing, pouring drinks, make it right. Had a short vision, can't see, hang tight. Dealing with emotions every day, feel like a bike. Yeah. Going up and down. Neighbors next door telling me to calm down. I ain't trying to hear, turn up all the sounds. Taking shots like I released a whole round. Long life combined with the long nights. Trying to grapple life in this.
Funny how we made that. We made that in a cabin. It was me, POS, and Dim Atlas. Straight up.
You guys, like, did you set out with the mission of, like, we're going to go to a cabin and write music, or were you guys just going to a cabin?
No,
for fun?
We set out with a mission to write music. I remember texting Steph, and I was like, yo, what are you doing? He said, man, we at this cabin just writing, just making music. I said, what? And he says, yeah, man, come up. Drove all the way to Hayward to this cabin, and just made music for a whole 4 days. And yeah, I was writing a song, and then I was like, yo, I can't sing. You think you can sing this? While talking to Dim Atlas on the other floor, I said, yo, man, you think you can, yelling, you think you can, you think you can sing this? I just wrote something. I don't know. I can't sing. And then that was that. And then we recorded upstairs, and then when we got back, we recorded the actual final version.
All right. I think we're good, unless there's anything you think I missed.
No.
Do you have anything for the Radio K listeners?
Follow your dreams. Drink a lot of water.
Have you heard the urban legend that Minnesota surpassed Chicago to claim the title of having the second most theater seats per capita? Although that statistic isn't quite true, I'm going to believe that the quality of theater in the Twin Cities is second to none, and one yearly festival sets out to prove it. Brooke Knoll has the story.
So our Fringe Festival, the Minnesota Fringe, is 11 days long. And it's over multiple venues. So this year we have 17 venues. So you have a setup where you have 11 different shows happening at the same time across the entire city.
This is Caitlin Osborne, the Fringe's Audience and Volunteer Services Director. Caitlin has been involved with the Chicago Fringe Festival before joining the Minnesota team. Through her time at the Fringe, she knows that it's a unique festival. This is evident through how the festival selects its artists.
So our festival, the Minnesota Fringe, is non-juried and non-censored.
By having no panel of judges to rate the shows, there is no bias towards any one performance. The goal of the Minnesota Fringe is best stated by their executive director, Don Bentley.
It is my job to champion the cause of the Fringe and to ensure that we meet our mission to connect adventurous artists with adventurous audiences.
How are these adventurous artists chosen?
We literally pull things out of a bingo ball cage, and if your number gets chosen, you are in the festival. Woohoo! We pride ourselves in being a platform where artists can come create, and for us, curating that isn't a part of our job.
The lottery ensures that there is no favoritism among performance companies and that everyone who applies has an equal opportunity of getting their show picked. This means that anyone has the chance of landing a show in the Fringe Festival, amateurs and established producers alike. As Dawn likes to put it,
the thing that I really appreciate about the theater in general is that it really is, I believe, the theater that gave birth to democracy, and I really feel like the arts are what's going to keep democracy stable.
Not only does the Fringe Festival offer artists the equal opportunity to get their performance out there, there are many other perks to putting on a show at the Fringe. Dawn lists several other things artists get from the Fringe Festival.
For the artists themselves, this is a laboratory of experimentation. It's a place for you, if you're an established artist in town, to maybe try out something new, or try out a new stage, or work with a new audience. And if you've never done this before, this is a place where you get to produce a play on a stage on equal footing with the professionals.
So what's in it for the patrons?
It's for people who maybe don't normally see the theater, or perhaps they already are in love with the theater, and they're able to come out and see a whole vast array of genres, plays, and performances in places that perhaps they don't normally get to.
The shows are only 60 minutes long, giving patrons the option of attending as many shows as they like without feeling overwhelmed. The Twin Cities has long been a haven for artists and appreciators of the arts alike, and the Fringe Festival shows it. Over 350 volunteers are dedicated to making sure that the shows, all 167 of them, do go on.
Without buy-in from the people and the community, we wouldn't be here. And without the amazing work of the artists, we wouldn't have anything to share with the community. So to survive a quarter of a century and to thrive that entire time and to continue to grow really says a lot about our artist community, and about Minnesotans and their love for the arts. It's just a new era for Fringe, and I really hope that people enjoy what comes in the next 25 years.
As for Dawn and Caitlin's favorite parts of the Fringe?
I think my favorite part of Fringe is that anyone can do that. There is a creative person inside of all of us, and arts are really an outlet that anyone can accomplish.
Yeah, there's a great energy in any Fringe venue that I just like to sort of observe. I think that's my favorite part.
For myself, I am excited to attend for my first year. I have been lucky enough to work on the staff of the Minnesota Fringe Festival this summer and have been dunked headfirst into the world of Twin Cities Theater. You can catch me at one of the venues every day of the festival, which runs from August 3rd to August 13th. You can go to www.fringefestival.org to see a list of shows being performed as well as sign up to be a volunteer. For 10 days this summer, all of the Twin Cities is a stage, and all of the men and women are merely players.
Overall, it's people that want to create a platform for artists, which is great. It's the one thing that ties us all together.
For Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Brooke Knoll.
This June, the Eau Claire Music Festival from Justin Vernon of Bon Iver had its third successful run. There were some pretty big names on the 2017 lineup, including Paul Simon, Chance the Rapper, and Sylvanesso. But Eau Claire isn't about the big acts so much as it is about the names you don't recognize. Emily Allen has the story.
It was one of our singers did a favor for a videographer of ours, a friend of ours, Finn Ryan. Ryan knew some people within Eau Claire's and kind of reached out to them maybe about having us come and perform.
That's Joe Rainey, a singer and drummer for Midnight Express, a Native American powwow drum group based in the Twin Cities. 2 years ago, Midnight Express was invited to perform at the Eau Claire's Festival in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, challenging the way Native Americans are usually represented at music festivals.
We showed up the first year and we kind of opened it up in the backstage area, and we lit some sage, and we gathered people to come to our where our drum was set up, and we smudged everyone off in the circle, and we kind of kicked everything off in a positive manner.
As Joe recalls, the group's name was an idea from one of its senior members.
It came from our late brother, Marlon Ray Dickinson. It was just, from what I understand, one of his ideas. So that was his name, and he passed away some years back. And as a group of younger brothers and older brothers, we carried that on, and we carried on the exact way that he wanted it to be spelled, the N-I-T-E.
Even though Midnight Express is based in the Twin Cities, its members come from several different tribes, and the group travels all across the Midwest and Canada to perform at powwows.
A powwow is just usually a gathering of any culture, race, anything in that way, to come together and to be around Native American culture in a public manner.
So far, the Eau Claire's Music Festival is the only place Midnight Express has performed at other than powwows.
Powwow's more of a schedule ran agenda type thing, you know, it's very structured. But at Eau Claire, it was a lot more free-flowing and just kind of, hey, you want to do it right here? Okay, we'll sing and, you know, do it in front of the lemonade stand or something. You know, we just kind of just, you know, felt it out. We did stop in the walking trail, coming down from the smaller stages. And the first year we had a Java group, Senyawa, was with us.
Senyawa is an experimental duo from Java, Indonesia. Midnight Express got to perform with them at Eau Claire's in 2016.
Senyawa also has, I think they were drawn to us because we were indigenous, as they are to their country, and they have their own indigenous instruments. I don't remember what they were using, but it was all handmade like ours, our drum is. And I think they were drawn to that, and they wanted to actually perform with us, which they ended up doing.
Performing at Eau Claire's has connected Midnight Express to artists and opportunities that Joe was more than excited to talk about during our interview. This year, he says the group got to perform with Spank Rock and Amanda Blink. Outside of the festival, Joe says Midnight Express was invited to a jam session at Justin Vernon's home and studio, April Bass. Justin Vernon, from Bon Iver, is the man behind the Eau Claire's Music Festival, and he is a co-curator.
I've met some people through the festival, also going to April Bass, Justin Vernon's home studio, and I've met some people there who've been so nice to approach us and to ask us things rather than just kind of having that step back approach.
But the Eau Claire's Festival isn't different for simply including a Native American group on its lineup. Joe says that compared to other music festivals, the Eau Claire's Festival offers a more respectful representation of Native American culture.
I think a lot of music festivals, you know, can learn from Eau Claire's. They didn't have a headdress policy or anything like that in their, you know, on their site whatsoever. But I do know, like in Glastonbury, certain, you know, overseas festivals, and maybe some here, maybe Coachella, they like to allow the headdress kind of thing, and that is definitely some appropriation.
When it comes to the headdress policies, other festivals have straight out banned similar forms of cultural appropriation. This includes several festivals in Canada, like Bass Coast, whose communications manager came up with the following rule. If you're asking yourself the question of whether or not you should be wearing it, you probably shouldn't be wearing it.
The historical context of what we do is lost when people aren't taught our history in school or know it themselves. So when they think they're honoring us, they might not be doing it in the most tasteful way. By having our culture there and having our type of singing there kind of helps bring along the other drum groups that are out there. So there's more than just us.
The two Midnight Express songs we played were selected from videos of their powwows online. You can find videos of Midnight Express on YouTube, and you can also check the group out on Twitter and Facebook. The Senyawa song we played was from a video of their 2013 live performance in Ruang Rupa. For Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Emily Allen.
That is all for this week's episode of Real College Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. You can hear all our episodes at radiok.org/realcollegepodcast. You can also subscribe on iTunes. Real College Podcast is a production of Radio K. It's produced by Alex Schumacher, Emily Allen, and Liv Riggins. I'm your host and managing editor, Jacob Maldonado Medina. Thanks for listening and tune in every Monday at 6:30 for arts and culture coverage.